CBC Investigates has done a three-part investigation into abuse in amateur sports in Canada. The first two parts of the investigation are now up online. Sort of the impetus for the report, or I should say, I guess the numerical takeaway from the report is that at least 222 coaches who were involved in amateur sports in Canada have been convicted of sexual offenses in the past 20 years, involving more than 600 victims under the age of 18. And a caveat here, you know, people who have investigated or dealt with sexual assault will tell you that it is a hugely underreported crime. So it stands to reason that there are probably a great number of other incidents out there that we don't know about. And again, keep in mind that this is in the past 20 years. And as I said in the last hour, we are more, at least I like to think we, as parents, are more aware of these things and more prepared to talk about it than in the past. And maybe that has something to do with the numbers. But nonetheless, when you hear those numbers, they are sobering. Lorraine Lafrenier is CEO of coach.ca, the Coaching Association of Canada. And she is quoted in this article, and her quote is, "It's pretty gut-wrenching to see the findings. There is a misguided sense of security when you drop your child off at the clubhouse." We're very pleased to be joined by Lorraine Lafrenier. Lorraine, thank you so much for joining us this morning. You know what? We've talked about this topic an awful lot on this show and in other contexts. I mean, quite often, a lot of time, it has to do with hockey, both male and female hockey. I don't know if I would say I had developed kind of a false sense of security about this, but I thought that because we were talking about it more and we're aware of it more, that perhaps we might be in the cusp of seeing a decrease in these incidents. How did you know, what was your takeaway from this report, and you know, how should we as parents approach this?
Thanks, Jeff. So I think the thing for me is we need parents to engage differently when they register their kids into sport. And so your comment about has things changed over time, the reality is there's no data, there's no baseline data in sport or in any other organization or system that can point to a decrease or an increase. In fact, the Me Too movement is actually helping us to get that data, right, where people are more forthcoming. So, you know, when you register your child at the club, the inclination currently is for the parent to say, you pointed out, what hockey equipment, what helmet, what shoulder pads, all of that stuff. And what we need parents to start doing is saying, do you have a code of conduct? Do you screen your coaches and officials? Do you apply the rule of two? We need to think of safety beyond the field of play, and we need to think of safety in the clubhouse, in the social environments, and in travel.
You know, it's funny. It's not funny, but when you were talking about that, I was just thinking, you know, from a parent's point of view, I can imagine, you know, the average parent going into that situation, and I guarantee you that part of their thought process would be, man, if I ask this question, you know, is my son or daughter, is there going to be a prejudice against them making the team? You know, I don't want the coach or the organization to think, oh, here we go. We got another one of those meddling parents. I mean, I'm overstating it a little bit. Is that something parents just have to get over, though? You know, because you'd ask your kid that if you went, I mean, Lorraine, if you took your child to a daycare center at a much younger age, you'd ask those questions. It seems as if we're still uncomfortable asking it when our kids are 12, 13, or 14.
Yeah. And of course, they're adolescents, so they're embarrassed by everything. So I think there's strength in numbers. You know, I think, yes, until we get over that hurdle of feeling comfortable asking the right safety questions, there is a strength in numbers. The website should have all of this public information for any sport club. And so you're right, there is a discomfort, but the more we can normalize it, the more Me Too normalizes it for everyone, the better off we're going to be. And so I think the flip side of that question is, okay, well, if you don't ask the question, what message are you sending? You know? So I'll give you a real example where I had a parent come to me and say, well, okay, I asked the question and I said, do you have a code of conduct and a complaints policy? And they said, yes. And the parent said, well, I can't find it on your website. And the club administrator said, well, we don't post it because we think it'll make people nervous. So it's exactly what you're talking about, but that needs to shift. We have to understand, just like we did with concussion over the last 20 years, the evolution of the conversation has changed. And the more we talk about it, the more we normalize it and the better impact we'll have to create a safer sport experience off the field of play.
Now, I was going to say, you know, it's interesting you mentioned the you mentioned concussions because, you know, we've often talked about it in the show. Like, you're not going to eliminate concussions in life, let alone sports. I mean, it's not going to happen. Kids are going to run into things. Kids are going to get hurt. It's an unfortunate part of parenting. As someone who is a parent of a water polo player, I can attest to that sometimes stuff happens and kids get hurt. But, you know, you're right. We talk about concussions now. We're more aware of it. You know, are there lessons maybe in it for organizations, whether they're national bodies or regional bodies or local bodies or parents? Are there lessons to be taken from that concussion, you know, the way we've started talking about that we can apply to this beyond simply the fact that we're talking about it? Like, it seemed to me that one of the things that happened in the whole debate about concussions in sports is some pretty high profile people and some people, quite frankly, with fairly impressive medical track records and medical resumes jumped on board and sort of spearheaded this. And I'm thinking of people like Dr. Charles Tatter and people like that. Is that kind of where we need to go with this other discussion as well?
Well, I think you're bang on. I just think of the initial impact that Sheldon Kennedy had when he came forward about sexual abuse with Graham James. And so without a doubt, we are pulling lessons from the concussion change over time. It's the medical community. It's the strong spokespeople. We launched the responsible coaching movement 3 years ago as a result of Bertrand Charest, who was the alpine ski coach, and we continue to support those victims. And it's really about the safe sport questions that you need to ask in your clubhouse. And we're just about to launch a summit, safe sport summits across the country with our provinces and territories, so that we actually apply part of that same model that was used in concussion. Sport needs to come together, talk about it, and create harmonized codes of conduct. Part of our challenge in the sports system is that every club has a different policy and different rules, and so it's too complicated. You can think of the way the education system changed over time, and they did that by setting up standard rules. No teacher alone in the classroom with a student. And that's really the biggest prevention that we can take on in sport, is the whole notion of the rule of two. Two adults present, or a coach with multiple people in a room, visible spaces.
What about screening procedures and things of that nature? Is there more work that needs to be done in that area?
Yeah. So let me just start off by saying everybody's convicted a first time. Mm-hmm. So when you think about screening, yes, there is a matrix of high risk situations, extended travel, alone time, people with special needs, that you have to think about from soup to nuts. And that can include a criminal record check, a vulnerable sector record check, an interview with the person and the candidate, job references. So you can really create significant prevention through the screening process. But you can't let screening give you a false sense of security. screening is one tool in the toolkit. The other tool that's critical, and it is critical, is the rule of two. If you have two adults present, you greatly diminish the risk of abuse. Mm-hmm. So that's critical. And the rule of two applies in social media. There should not be texting going back and forth outside of the sphere of what's required within a professional code of coaching between a coach and an athlete.
You know, you were talking about this, and as I was reading this article, you know, one of the things that I sort of started thinking about is, you know, the coaches who are doing things the right way, who are adhering to all these procedures, you know, who are doing it for the reason people coach, because they sincerely care about kids. You know, they like the idea of taking young people and making them better. What role can they play in this? You know,
we know how impactful coaches can be. Just look at how people point throughout their lifetime to the impact of that coach having on them in their growth and development, not just in the technical and tactical, but in the person, their growth as a person. And so we want to celebrate that and protect that. And the way we protect it and the way those great coaches can protect the profession of coaching is by making sure they adhere to these rules. There are no exceptions. I'm a great coach, so it's okay if I take my athlete to, you know, to extreme. So, you know, to the cottage for the weekend. But mm-hmm. I don't care how great a coach you are, that should not be happening. Times have changed, and we must recognize the work that we need to do to put the professional boundaries around coaches. And so great coaches have a role to play. They go into their clubhouse and they talk to the parents and the athletes about what they're doing in safe sport, what should be expected. They point to their codes and their policies, and that's how great coaches become even greater coaches, is they hold themselves to the same standards of other great coaches.
You know, Lorraine, not surprisingly, you know, two sports that have the highest number of offenses here, you know, hockey and soccer, a lot of that has to do, and when I say not surprisingly, it's just because there are so many kids, you know, boys and girls playing both of those sports. I mean, the registration numbers, you know, will support that. Those are the two sports, at least in this study, that have the most. Is there any... This might seem like an odd question, but generally, is it easier... I don't want to say legislate, is it easier to guard against these issues in individual sports compared to team sports, or vice versa? Or is that just too general a discussion to have?
Well, my initial reaction is to share with you and your listeners is to say no sport is immune. Mm-hmm. The worst thing a person can say is, oh, not in my backyard. That's really not what this is about. Predators, and I'll say it again, are smart people and they look for points of access. So we need to get away from thinking that you can tell a good person from a bad person. That's not how the world works. It's not about judging your gut feel, this is a good person or a bad person. It's about taking it away from that conversation and establishing the professional guidelines that we want to see coaches have. So your point about team sports versus individual sports, well, in fact, there's strength in numbers. So, you know, that is an important consideration in team sports. They actually have the strength in numbers. But it's things like the dressing room, right? No coach alone with one athlete in the dressing room. And that is universal to all sport, right, in terms of the key areas where people can be alone with an individual. And that's really what we're trying to remove. So it's not about team sport or individual sport. It's about the system as a whole, setting up rules so parents understand that's what they should expect when they put their daughter or son into sport.